I want to echo what Brother Whiteside prayed, and that it is a significant blessing for us to be together. Beautiful prayer. Wonderful effort put forth this evening. We have a good number out for a Sunday evening, and I'm just so encouraged by your devotion to the Lord. And again, I welcome those who are listening online. I have a $100 bill to whoever can take this rock and make iced tea come out of it. Seriously, if you can take this rock right now, okay, and right now show us, get some iced tea from this, I got $100 on. I'll get it to you, I promise. $100. I'm good, trust me. But I will. If you could do this right now, rid this rock, make some type of liquid, especially tea, come forth. Impossible. It is. Nobody can do that. And yet that's exactly what we see God telling Moses to do in Psalm 78 when he told them, and you're killing the lesson, guys. I don't know what's happening right here. There we go. Thank you, brother. All right. No money for you. But he told him in Psalm 78 and verse 20, okay, here we go. All right. Yeah. All right, I'll give you some. Okay. But he told him in Psalm 78 and verse 20, to strike the rock, and from the rock the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. So it wasn't he just got a glass of iced tea out of this. Water was gushing forth from when he decided or was told to strike the rock. Amazing. Truly amazing to think about. What a thing that would have been to witness. Well, sometime later, God told him in Numbers chapter 20 to do the same thing again. Make some more water from the rock for the people. Except this time, God told him to speak to the rock. So, as if striking this is not enough to get water come out of it. Now, I want you to pull into your little hat of tricks and pull out the trick where you can speak this thing. So just speak it, and iced tea comes forth. Impossible. Truly impossible for anyone to do this. And yet that's exactly what God was doing through his chosen one at this time. And in Numbers chapter 20, it says in verse 8, the Lord said to Moses, saying, take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock and give drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. What a fascinating development here. Again, very impossible thing to occur for water to come from a rock. But then to speak, as he says, to do. And he, of course, for one reason or another, decides not to do that, but to strike the rock. Water still came out abundantly. God still provided for these people. But he struck the rock twice, and God told Moses, trip is canceled for you. You're not going. And all this time he had put forth in dealing with these people and leading them out of Egypt and all the issues he's had along the way thus far, one moment of anger and not having control over his passion, one moment cost him the entire trip. He could not see the end of what God was doing with these people and leading them to the land of Canaan. This, of course, is an example of when Moses sinned. And I believe God has recorded this story for us, this record for us to benefit from. And in looking at this, I believe there are some very valuable lessons that you and I can learn in our relationship with God. When Moses sinned, his failure reminds us of several things. One being that hard times do not justify sin. When he decided to strike the rock this time, he was going through a very difficult time. His sister had just died. As the text starts out in Numbers chapter 20, where Miriam had died and she was buried. In the context, it shows that these people were constantly blaming him for their problems, constantly accusing him of trying to mislead them, trying to kill them, and really that he is doing such a poor job as a leader that they wished they had been killed with other Israelites who were punished at other times for their complaining against God and especially challenging Moses' authority as the leader of God's people. And they were struck down by God. And it says in Numbers chapter 20 that there was no water, it says in verse 2, for the congregation. So they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness? Complaining. And not just complaining, it's your fault. You're doing a terrible job. You don't care about us. You don't love us. You have no concern for us. Why is there no water? Why are you leading us away from the water? How come you're not leading us to where we can be provided for? You don't care about us. We would have been better off dying like the others who've already passed. That's the setting when all this happened. He's hearing this. And what's terrible about their complaints is they don't realize that at this time, the only reason they're still walking the earth is because of Moses. Because God, on two other occasions, had said, I'm about to wipe out these people and start over just with you. He was mad at them, God was, for their continual complaints. In chapter 16 of Numbers, it says, in verses 41 through 49, now keep in mind, in verse 35, fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense. And so it says in verse 41, on the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, you have killed the people of the Lord. Now it happened when the congregation had gathered against Moses and Aaron that they turned toward the tabernacle of meeting, and suddenly the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of meeting, and the Lord said to Moses, get away from this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell on their faces. So Moses said to Aaron, take a censer and put fire in it from the altar and put incense on it and take it quickly to the congregation and make them make atonement for them. For wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun. Excuse me. But it says in verse 47, then Aaron took it as Moses commanded and ran into the midst of the assembly, and already the plague had begun among the people. So he put in the incense and made atonement for the people, and he stood between the dead and the living, so the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the Korah incident. Sorry. So Aaron returned to Moses at the door of the tabernacle of meeting, for the plague had stopped. This had just happened. So he stops this plague from continuing to wipe out these people. Now keep in mind, this has already happened on one other occasion, when in Numbers chapter 14, they had been rebelling against God, and God said, I'm going to wipe them out and start over with you. And he begged them, please don't do this to your people. Remember your covenant with them, your promise for them. And so it's happened again here in Numbers chapter 16 that they're living because of Moses, because he loved them, and petitioned God not to kill them. And in the midst of all these things happening, they're still accusing him of not caring for them. And it's in that setting when God says, okay, speak to the rock, and this guy's headed up to here with these people. Do we have to provide water for you? Do we always have to be there for you? Can you not care for yourself? And so he, in that moment of rage, decides to strike it twice, and as a result, was cursed for it. What that shows me is hard times do not justify sin. And we have a good way of trying to justify our behavior. That sometimes we have pressures at work or problems at home, or no one appreciates our sacrifices for them, especially at home. And so sometimes we feel that because all these injustices are happening to us, that allows us to mistreat other people. That allows us to mistreat our family. That allows us to go out drinking or some other form of immorality. That it permits us to not seek the Lord first in all things. Life's hard. We have a lot of bad things happening to us. Certainly God understands this one time when I'm not as good as I should be. We do that. And Moses was having a very difficult time in life. And yet even though he was having a hard time, it did not justify him sinning. It did not excuse his rebellion against God's will. He spoke rashly, is what the Bible says in Psalm 106. And that's the very lesson we're to learn from him, is that we're accountable for what we say even when we don't feel well, even when we are upset or the world has turned against us. We're still accountable for what we say to our spouse or our children or our brethren or people in the community. In Psalm 106, the Bible says in verses 32 and 33, they angered him also at the waters of strife, so that it went ill with Moses on account of them, because they rebelled against his spirit. So he spoke rashly with his lips. So here he's showing God was upset with them. It wasn't wrong for Moses to be upset with these people. God was. They were discontent. They were complaining. They were selfish. They had no faith. But that did not justify Moses refusing to obey God. He spoke rashly with his lips. In Numbers chapter 20, back in the context, it shows in verses 10 and 12, do we have to provide for you? So he had elevated himself on the same level of God and was expecting an exemption in how he was treating these people. But God said to him in verse 12, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land. Friends, I know what it's like. I mean, I know what it's like to be frustrated and things not working out the way we want them to be. We have those moments. I mean, life works against us. We all know that. But we're still accountable. We're still accountable for what we say and how we say it and how we respond to God's will. The Bible says in Ephesians chapter 4, it's not wrong for you to be angry. There are a lot of injustices in this world. It's not wrong to be upset about that. We just have to control our anger. In Ephesians chapter 4, it says in verse 26 and 27, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. How many people right now are in prison because they had a fit of rage? They didn't keep their anger under control in one moment. They didn't keep it under control, and it altered their life or someone else's life. How many people are dead tonight because they didn't control their anger? So we have to do better. I understand the frustration. And Moses, I can certainly look at this at a surface level and say, my word, the brother was going through it. He really was. I mean, everywhere he looked, he had negative, hurtful things coming at him. I can see that. All right. Yeah, you did. No doubt you did. But God said, speak. And for whatever reason, you spoke rashly, and as a result, you struck the rock. Now, what this also shows me, number two, is that we must obey God's current will. That's a good principle we see from this. We've already noted how there was a time in the past when God told them, as they were coming out of the land, he told Moses to provide water for these people by striking the rock. God told him to do that the very first time in Exodus chapter 17 and verse 6. But at some time later, we come to Numbers 20, and God is saying, now I want you to speak to the rock. And so his will for him had changed at that point regarding water coming from a rock. And what that shows us is that God holds us accountable for obeying what he's requiring of us today, what he wants us to do today. And when we choose to disobey it today, whatever his will is, he holds us accountable for that. We can't go back to what he used to say, what he used to require of people, or even ourselves in times past. We have to abide by what his will is for us today. And that is so evident in a story like this. And it's important that we get this. We're part of a journey, and we're part of a journey that had multiple dispensations. That is, God revealed his will in different ways to people in times past. There was the patriarchal period where he spoke through the fathers. There was the Mosaical period where he spoke to his people through the law of Moses. Today we're in the Christian dispensation where he speaks to us through Christ and his will. But God has directed people to do various things in various ways in times past, and we have to understand that those were different times. That just like he may have told Moses in times past, you strike the rock, it had changed to speaking to the rock. And there were things in times past when God told his people to not work on Saturday. That if you work on the seventh day, you're to be killed. That was the Sabbath law. Don't work on Saturday. It's a holy day to keep the Sabbath, every Sabbath. He told his people at one time that they were to use mechanical instruments in public worship. That the Levites were the ones who were to play in the congregation and the people were to sing. He directed them in things like that. He said that there was a time when the priests could only come from the tribe of Levi. There were even times when he told his people to kill animals in worship in order to find the forgiveness of sins. He required this of his people in times past. There was even regulations that if your brother passed away and you're the next person in line, you were required to marry your sister-in-law. He was requiring polygamy. He permitted polygamy. Multiple wives in times past. Through those previous dispensations, both the patriarchal and the mosaical, some of the godliest people in the Bible had multiple wives. Abraham had multiple wives. Jacob had multiple wives. David had multiple wives. Godly people with multiple partners. And God permitted that because they were under different dispensations. They were under different laws with God. But today, in the Christian dispensation, we all must walk and abide in the authority of Christ. And in the law of Christ, he doesn't say it's wrong for us to work on Saturday. But he does teach us to honor the Lord's Day, to especially remember his sacrifice on the first day of the week. And in fact, it says in Colossians chapter 2 that if anybody comes along and tries to bind the Sabbath regulations on you, that you're to reject that person. That God no longer binds that law on people of honoring the Sabbath day. It says in Colossians chapter 2 in verse 14 beginning that Jesus, having wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us, he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. Having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it. So, Let no one judge you in food or in drink, or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths, which are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance is of Christ. So we're under a different law. And we don't uphold the Passover, like our brother mentioned in the Lord's Supper tonight, in referencing when Jesus died. We don't do that anymore. It's not required of God's people today. He doesn't want us to use mechanical instruments in worship like he told the Israelites to do. In fact, he tells us that the device we're to play on is our heart, to sing and make melody in your heart to the Lord. Yeah, he did require it in times past, but we're under a different law. And that's why you have a total absence of this in the New Testament. There is nothing, no example, no reference whatsoever to mechanical instruments in worship to the Lord. Even in history, church history, it shows that it was completely absent. It wasn't until recent times that people added these things to worship. He teaches us that every Christian is to be a priest and not people from a particular tribe. 1 Peter 2 and verse 5. And instead of having multiple wives, he says that we're to go back to the pattern God set forth in the garden when God brought Eve to Adam and brought them together. That's the pattern Jesus enforces in terms of monitoring and defining marriage today. And so we can no longer have multiple wives and still be pleasing to God. But they could in other times. We can't kill animals today for forgiveness of sins. It doesn't do any good. But they could before because they were under a different law. And so we see, just as God told Moses to strike that rock to get some water, later he said, speak to the rock to get the water. Moses went back to the first command. God said, that won't do. I'm going to punish you for that. You disobeyed me. I want you to do what I say to do right now. Obey my will today. And he decided, for whatever reason, not to do that. Certainly we can understand that we're under a new covenant, that we're not under the old covenant that Moses was under, that it was prophesied even through Jeremiah that God would bring that covenant to an end. In Hebrews chapter 10, it says, in referencing that prophecy in verses 9 and 10, behold, I have come to do your will, O God. He takes away the first, that he may establish the second. And that's exactly where we are. You know, there was a time in the United States when it was illegal for women to vote. Illegal. Weren't allowed to do this. We understand that eventually that was changed under the 19th Amendment of our Constitution, and now it is permitted. And in fact, it's not only permitted, it's illegal to go back to the other law. It's illegal to bind what used to be the law for women not to vote in this nation. Why is that the case? We're under a different law. We have new regulation. It has changed. And so you can't go back to the old. And then let me say real quickly in closing that when Moses sinned, I believe it's a wonderful illustration for us that sin is sin. That anytime you have a holy person, a righteous person who chooses to violate God's will, God doesn't overlook that. He doesn't give anybody a free pass or an exemption. He considers that a violation of his will. And God did not show partiality to this man. He chose not to speak. God said, okay, that's your choice, but you're not going to Canaan. You are not going to enter that land because you disobeyed me. And what we see about our God is he is a God who is completely holy and pure, and he is a God who is impartial in every way. He loves us, no doubt. He loves every single one of us, especially through the sending of his Son. But when we are his people and we choose to violate his will, he does not cover his eyes to that. He still sees our sin. When you can go back in 1 Kings chapter 15 and verse 5 in talking about David, that David did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and did not turn aside from anything that God commanded him all the days of his life except in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. So God in his word is showing David is a good man. He sought the Lord, a holy man, but he messed up. He messed up when he took Bathsheba from Uriah the Hittite. God did not overlook his sin. Now listen, we're talking about Moses, and we're talking about David. We're talking about some major characters in the Bible who did phenomenal things for the Lord while they were here. And even though they did that, God did not show an exemption to their sin. This is Moses. Moses did things in the flesh that you will never do. He spoke to God person to person, face to face, as one friend to another. You will never have that type of experience in this life, in that body. He did, but you won't. And yet, even though he had that experience and that type of relationship with God, that was no factor when it came to him deciding to disobey God. And I need to remember that. The Bible says in 1 Peter chapter 1 that I don't need to expect any special favors from God when it comes to my response to his will. He's impartial. And he tries to let us know this. He is impartial to everybody. He's equal to us all. In the context of telling us to be holy as God is holy, it says in verses 17 and 18, 1 Peter chapter 1, if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you are not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers. Well, I need to remember that. Whenever I start to think, well, you know what? I'm going through a hard time in life. God knows why I'm yielding to this or acting this way or forsaking this or neglecting this. He knows. He's okay with that. He knows what kind of pressure I'm under. It won't work. He's impartial. And if he was a God who would cancel the trip for Moses, then he is a God who will cancel the trip for us when we choose to rebel and not do his will. Moses sinned. And when Moses sinned, it shows us that hard times do not justify sin, that we are responsible for obeying God's current will for us, and that sin is sin no matter who practices that. Now here's the wonderful thing. Moses may have missed out on the land of Canaan, but I believe that he is definitely in eternity with God. He's in paradise. I would think he's in paradise. He was used at the Mount of Transfiguration. He appeared there with Jesus in Matthew chapter 17. So I don't think he was eternally deprived of his relationship with God. He just missed out on the land of Canaan. And in fact, if you ever want to see just how serious our God is about his will, it's found in Deuteronomy chapter 34, where this book is closing. And at the close of this book, you have this little scene described in Deuteronomy chapter 34. When God has already told Moses, you're not going. But before Moses left this earth, God brought him to the edge of the land of Canaan, took him up on Mount Nebo. And when he's on Mount Nebo, he's looking across the land of Canaan. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, it says in verses 3 and 4 that he is there. And the Lord said to him in verse 4, this is the land of which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there. In verse 5, so Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. So God kept his word. He didn't change his mind on that. But my, oh my, what a merciful God. How many times had Moses wondered about what that would look like, what that would be like for the people to have a land of their own? And just before he leaves this earth, God says, I want you to see what could have been. You can see it. You're not going, but at least you get to see it. What a merciful God. But I wonder if Moses thought, as he was looking out on this scene, and supposedly this is an actual picture of a scene from Mount Nebo looking over the land of Canaan. I wonder if he thought, man, what could have been? What could have been? If you and I miss heaven, what will we miss? Now, I know Moses missed out on something special by not going to Canaan, but it's nothing compared to what you and I will miss if you and I don't keep our faith all the way to the end. If we're not faithful unto death and seek the Lord first with all of our heart every single day, there is no day off from this. Every day we love the Lord and grow in our devotion to Him. If we fail to do that, and you and I leave this earth without being on track to go to heaven, what will we have missed if we miss heaven? What will we have missed? With not being able to be in the presence of God, not being able to be in the presence of Jesus or the Spirit and the innumerable angels that are there in the presence of God, what will we have missed if we miss heaven? And so I hope that you and I can see from a lesson like this the importance of being faithful all the way, giving God our life in everything we do. It could be that you're here and you're not a child of God. We encourage you to put your faith in God and His Son. And if you understand that Jesus is God's Son and you're ready to give your life to Him, then we encourage you to do this, even tonight, to start all over in your relationship with Him. He makes that possible. And if you're ready to be immersed into the body of Christ, then we encourage you to do that tonight. If you need to make things right with God in a public way, like we saw from our sincere brother and sister this morning, then I encourage you to come back to God as we stand in